Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, the Bear, Chris Felica, will join us. We will go over the national title game, a little recap of UConn-Michigan, maybe look at next year's odds for just a second, talk some, well, we got a little everything to talk about. He's got Masters bets, baseball thoughts, futures, awards, Kentucky Derby, college football, draft. Bear has everything. He is locked and loaded. So we'll get to him in a minute, but I'll start here where I left off Monday talking about Michigan and UConn, and I made the comparison to Indiana and Miami in the college football title game, and boy, there was deja vu, and that deja vu continued into Monday night, both on a Monday night. Both, if you had UConn futures, it was similar to having the Miami futures where you got to the title game and you faced an opponent that was just off an absolute beatdown, a curb stomping of their opponent, which inflated the line from 5 or 6 up to 7 or 8. And to continue the comparisons, Miami lost by 6, had their chances covered, but did not win. UConn loses by 6, covers, but did not win. And UConn did just enough to make that loss painful, just enough to make you go back and replay plays in your head, replay certain scenarios and, you know, different sequences in the game. Caravan with the 4-point play, where he allows the 4-point possession, I should say, with the hook and hold. UConn had their chance with the breakaway at the end that looked like it was going to be a fast break that would cut it to 4, and you're still on the wrong side of it, but you had a chance. They blew that. A 3 made it 9, and even after that, Caravan has the ball in the air to cut it to 1 with about 16 seconds left, where, hey, if you're down 1, who knows? UConn had a couple leads or brief leads in the first half, and just once they had that lead by a couple points, I think 2 was as high as it got, which for live betting purposes, if you had a UConn future, 2 being as high as it got was frustrating in that, man, if it gets any higher, if it gets to 5, 6, 7, you can start to really think about naming your profit with UConn futures depending upon your price. You couldn't get above a 2-point lead. The live line didn't really adjust to the point where it was much different than it was pregame. And once UConn had that 2-point lead, it was just a parade to the free throw line, which is going to haunt you for UConn. Now, you weren't the better team, and you could say Michigan could have won this game by 15. You could have said UConn could have won the game. I don't know which is more likely. I think the result was justified. But the parade to the free throw line when you had the lead is going to be one of those sequences that's going to haunt you. Just foul after foul after foul. I did think UConn got a little bit of a rough whistle in the first half. In the second half, it's interesting. They just kind of let everything go. It almost turned into a rugby game, a football game, and there were not a lot of fouls called. But I thought UConn got a little bit of a short end of the whistle in the first half. The hook and hold by letter of the law, that was not a bad call. That was the correct call. Man, that's a flagrant foul. You guys got his arm hooked around him. I know the rule, but just based on what you think the rule should be, it just doesn't seem like something that should be a 2 shots in the ball. It seemed pretty innocent for 2 shot in the ball. But regardless, Michigan gets the win. I can't get into these arguments. This is some all-time team. There's not a ton. It just doesn't feel like that Michigan's got 3 or 4 NBA All-Stars running around on this team. This is an ugly game, and it's what's going to haunt you if you're UConn. 13% from 3 for Michigan, and UConn got 22 offensive rebounds and won the rebounding battle. If I would have told you before the game, or somebody would have told me before the game, Michigan 13% from 3, and they will out-rebound Michigan, you would have said, wow. Once again, UConn is holding up the trophy, and they probably would have been most nights if you just have those stats. UConn did just what they needed to in terms of mucking up the game. Some of it was Michigan missing shots. Some of it was Lendeborg clearly not being 100%. And, you know, UConn actually started pretty well from 3-2. I think at one point, 5 of 12, and they were hitting threes, and Michigan wasn't. And that's always a concern and I think at the half, it was like 5 of 15 from 3 for UConn, and Michigan was 0 of 8. I mean, Michigan had no makes, and UConn had 5 makes, and Michigan still had the lead. And once it got to 7, you just never felt like UConn could rally against this Michigan team, even though they had their opportunities, and they did certainly have their opportunities. Michigan wins the game. They don't cover. And just a frustrating. It's not going to haunt you forever. You won 2. If you're UConn, it's not going to haunt you forever. You won 2 of them. You weren't the better team. It took a miracle just to get to the Final Four. You beat Illinois. All things considered, it's a great year. A month, two months from now, you're going to say this is a great year. And it's not like this was a game you should have won. wasn't a game you shouldn't have won, but it's a game you could have won if you're UConn. And the point I made at the beginning, you did just enough if you're UConn. The late rally, the banked in three, you did just enough to make this haunt you a little bit. It'll haunt you a little bit with, man, what if Michigan Dish didn't make every free throw? What if we just hit a few more threes? And I mentioned they're going to have to take as many threes as they took against Illinois, and they'll probably have to hit a few more. I think it was 12 of 33 for three against Illinois. They got the same amount of attempts against Michigan, 33 attempts, but they only made 9 of them. And a couple of them were late when the game was pretty much over here. They just, man, the end of the first half and into the second half, it felt like they missed a good, you know, dozen, 14 threes in a row. It was right around there where they just could not get one to go. And one here, one there, a couple missed free throws by Michigan. They could have stolen the game. But again, the other side of that coin, if Michigan made any threes, they would have won by 15. And there was a couple points that game seemed like it was destined for Michigan by 15 or 20. I think when it was like a 7-point game, 9-point game, which is what it was for a lot of the second half, if you would have told me now, or if you had asked me then, hey, is this going to be a UConn win? What's more likely, a UConn win or Michigan wins by 15 or 20? I would have said probably Michigan by 15 or 20. It felt like it was headed to 15 or 20 and a decisive Michigan win, but an ugly game. UConn hangs around, but they do not win, obviously, and they do cover for those of you that took the points. The number came into effect at the end with, you know, the free throws, and the kid from Michigan throws it down the court, and the game lands on 6. Look, it was 5.5, so getting the best of the number, once again, very important. And Michigan holds up the trophy. Like I was saying, though, this is not some all-time great team. I mean, the team 2 years ago for UConn, who also killed everybody in the tournament, won the championship game by 15. You know, Castle's going to be an all-star NBA player for a lot of years. There's already talk of him being an all-NBA player in his second year. Klingon's a good NBA player. They had other guys on the team, Caravan, et cetera. That was a really dominant UConn team. The Anthony Davis team had, you know, two of the top three picks. It was Kid Gilchrist was either second or third pick, but they had real NBA talent. Even the Kentucky team that went undefeated and didn't win the championship, I mean, that team had Towns. They had Booker. They had real, real NBA talent. They had other first-round draft picks. And I know it's just different now, too. That's the other thing where, you know, growing up watching this stuff in the 90s, these NBA guys would stay around for 2, 3, sometimes 4 years. Duncan stayed for 4 years. Not that his team is on this level, obviously. It's just a much different thing now. That I know you can only compare it to relative to the competition. Yes, Michigan just blowtorched everybody except for the title game where they just kind of got by and won an ugly game. But there's just not – it's just not what it used to be in terms of, like, the NBA talent playing at the college level. And there's just not the connection to these players, too. I mean, you're not going to – what are you going to remember about this Michigan team, you know, 15, 20 years from now other than they won? I mean, there's just not a lot of continuity. These guys are hired guns. They're in. They're out. And there's just not that connection, that continuity with any of these rosters, which, look, we can still watch the games. We still bet the games. We still enjoy them. But that aspect of college basketball, you know, you just don't have that anymore. I've referenced the Duke-UConn upset from 1999, where you look back at that fondly and say, oh, Jake Voskal, I remember him, and Ricky Moore, and these random guys, and these guys that were on Connecticut for 2, 3, 4 years. You don't have that with these players. Caravan is a rare one where he's been there through this run. And, oh boy, Hurley continues to cover these numbers, 19-1 against the spread. And somebody was saying, well, somebody was mocking the idea of, oh, you can't bet against Hurley, or it's scary to bet against Hurley. Hurley's covered 19 out of 20 in this tournament. If you don't think it's scary to bet against him in this tournament, I don't know what to tell you. But I can't put Michigan on the list of, like, all-time teams, on the short list at least. Obviously, 3 losses, they won the championship. But remember, didn't win their conference championship. And just, they're on some list. I mean, well, it's obviously an incredible season, the margin of victory, the championship, what they did to Arizona in the Final Four. And that's where you got to give UConn credit. Even though, look, it's sports, you don't get any credit for trying. You don't get any credit for coming close. Unless, you know, you're betting these games in terms of that, in terms of the spread. But UConn did not embarrass themselves. Michigan embarrassed Arizona, ran them off the floor. They embarrassed Tennessee, ran them off the floor. Those teams were embarrassed. UConn was valiant in defeat. They got every ounce they could out of that talent. Yes, they'll be frustrated that they couldn't make a few more shots and hold up the trophy, and it was there for them. And that's got to stick with them a little bit. It's got to stick with them. And you can tell Hurley, who handled it well after the game, he said, you know what, he called those Michigan team the Monstars. He goes, I'm proud of my guys. They out-rebounded them. He goes, we wanted to be out there what they're doing. We wanted to be celebrating. We're not. We're in here. And you could tell that hurt. And there's something raw about losing and just watching the other team celebrate. And boy, from a betting perspective, I just had too many of these recently where you get these long shots. Miami, UConn, Jackson Dart, Rookie of the Year. And you just go down the line. Wembanyama looks like it's going to be another one in MVP. I tailed Gil Alexander on that one. Where you have these long shot tickets. They play out for a while. You get close, but you come up just short. It's really, really frustrating. And it takes something out of you. But, hey, when you get them to go, they feel good. And it's just part of the game. So we'll move on here. I don't have anything for college basketball next year. It's really hard to know. I mean, UConn's 20-1. That's not the worst bet I've ever heard. When you just think that Hurley probably is going to put together a representative team, he's going to get the most out of him, and UConn's probably going to be in the mix. So of all these numbers, UConn 20-1 is not the worst bet I've ever heard. Duke is the short shot at 7-1. All the usual suspects. Florida's in the mix at 14-1. I got Michigan 12-1 to repeat. Arizona, Michigan State, Kansas all in that 15-18-1 range. All the usual suspects. St. John's 35-1. If you have faith in Patino to put together a championship team. So that's that. We will move on to other things here. Baseball, the Masters, we'll get Bears' thoughts on all that stuff here in a minute. The last thing I will say, boy, the NBA has been a disaster, really. Their regular season is just, there's a reason we don't talk about it much. It's just, it's such a broken sport, especially from an entertainment standpoint. But these overs have done really, really well the last couple of weeks just because it's hard to make the number high enough. There's no intensity in these games. I mean, these games are routinely 155 to 130. I mean, games are in the 260s, the 270s, the 280s. So I think if you can find some of these games where you don't anticipate a lot of intensity and they're not that hard to find, I don't think you'll go wrong here just playing the overs here. I think playing the overs in some of these games and really most of these games. I'm looking at the Tuesday spreads here, recording this on Tuesday, obviously. Starting to get jacked up a little bit, like Bulls-Wizards was 250.5, Miami-Raptors was 240.5, so there's definitely an adjustment, but I know the last week or so, it seems like just about every game or three-quarters of the games go over here, but the books are not dumb. The books are going to adjust and at some point here make these overs not as easy to bet. So we keep that in mind, though, some of these overs here with these tanking teams, these teams that don't care, which, I mean, look at it one way. If you're going to the playoffs, you don't care. Just get me ready for the playoffs. If you're not going to the playoffs, you really don't care. You're just, you know what, it's been a long season. Let's get ready for our vacation here. Let's enjoy our summer. So nobody cares. You're in a sport here with nobody cares. So, again, even though these have been adjusted a little bit, I would still look at some of these overs here between these bad and tanking teams, or really just any of these teams. I think if you blindly play the overs, you'd probably do pretty well here. But somebody who always does really well is the Bear, Chris Felica. We will get his thoughts. National title game recap. Masters, baseball, horse racing, college football, draft. We got it all with the Bear. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we're back. Should have been more podcast. You can catch him at Fox Sports, the Bear Betts podcast. He is the Shohei Ohtani of Fox Sports. He's versatile. He likes action. And he joins us now. It is Chris Felica. Bear, what's going on? I made this comparison before the game. I made it to you. Boy, this Michigan-UConn game felt a lot like Miami-Indiana in terms of a future you couldn't hedge. The look-ahead line goes from like 5 or 6 to 7 or 8. The dog covers. You can't really hedge. You're in the game enough to feel like you got a shot, but you fall short. Yeah. Just eerily similar, deja vu, and not the good kind. But thanks for coming on. How's it going?
Yeah, it's a pretty good way to put it. And unlike the Miami-Indiana game where I did not hedge because I thought we had the right side and I thought we were the better team, I let that roll and unfortunately came up close. But yesterday I did wind up hedging out some of that 26-1 that we got ridiculously in the Sweet 16, which was available. And I did find some like minus 298 or something like that, and was able to play some. So I did okay on the game, but yeah, you're right. It was a tough game because I sat there and I couldn't decide if like Michigan was the better side and it shouldn't even have been that close, or wow, UConn kind of did everything they needed to do to win the game that they did, but they just ultimately didn't hit enough threes. So it was just a really weird, kind of ugly game. And I don't know. I guess if you had UConn, you kind of felt like, okay, I did have the right side and cover in the 6.5. And if you had Michigan, you were like, okay, you kind of feel the same way. Like, how did we not cover that game? Did looking at how poor UConn. So I don't know. I guess the one thing I will say is that the best team all year did wind up winning. We don't necessarily, or I shouldn't say we, I don't necessarily like the state of the game right now where you don't really feel a, I mean, I like going back and like, I feel like you think Michigan and you think Fab Five, like you associate players and with schools and programs, like
no connection.
You think UConn and you think Rip Hamilton and Ray Allen and Scotty Burrell and those guys. Like you think of like a associate players with programs, and now it's just not there. Like are you really going to associate Elliott Cadeau all time, where Yexel Lamberg all time with Michigan, knowing that they were UAB, North Carolina? So I don't know. I'm just kind of the grumpy get off my lawn right now.
I enjoy the games as much as I ever did, although I like the tournament less with all of the, it's more predictable. But I still love the tournament, but I'm with you. There's just not the connection to players. I mean, you go back, and especially this time of the year, they have those Twitter accounts like, on this date in history, yep, UConn upset Duke, and you relive it. Oh, man, Ricky Moore and El Amin and yep, Jake Foschkel. We're not going to have that in 15 or 20 years. There's bigger problems in the world, obviously. We're not going to have that in 15, 20 years. We'll remember the game still. But like you said, there's just not going to be that connection to the players. Without getting into numbers, how did you handle it? Did you just get your stake back? Did you kind of lay down a sacrifice bunt and you didn't really care who won either game? Because that was, what was your number in terms of hedging? You had a better,
that's a great,
if I had the 26-1, I would have done more, because I had 15-1. So your numbers worked better by jumping in late.
Yeah, I think sacrifice bunt was probably the bit. That's a great analogy of the way to do it. And I looked at, I essentially was able to do it where if UConn won, I kind of like got it down to like 15-1, kind of like that after the hedge, okay, 14-1. So I did come out ahead. The one thing that I was bummed about, I didn't feel great about the Cavs in the NBA last night, just because they're kind of tanking to be in that 4 or 5 games. So I didn't know if they were going to wind up winning or losing. Like if you could have parlayed maybe Michigan with the Cavs to maybe get that number down a little bit lower, maybe find a tank game in the NBA to kind of parlay it down a little bit more, you could have done that. But I just eliminated it all down and just kind of laid close to $3 with Michigan and did that. And then I actually did play a little bit more live, especially at halftime when you were looking at Michigan being, what, 0-for-8 from 3 and all the fouls in the game and shooting whatever they shot, and it was a – And they were only up 4. You're like, okay, this is going to kind of balance out in the second half. So I did play a little bit more Michigan money line at halftime.
Yeah, and it was frustrating because I basically covered my stake, but I was looking for that 5, 6, 8-point lead where I could say, all right, I can lay $1.50, $1.60. I think UConn was up 2, and I think 2 was their biggest lead, and Caravan had a 3 in the air that would have put it up 5, and that would have been the point where, all right, now we're talking here. And it was just kind of a tease. And to go back to your kind of original point, if you told me Michigan should have won by 15, I think that's probably fair. You could argue that. If you told me UConn should have won, they're equal. You could look at it both ways. UConn could have won. Michigan could have won by 15. I guess we got a pretty justifiable result. Did you have a problem? I thought overall the refs were fine. I thought UConn got a tough whistle in the first half. The first half they called everything. The second half turned into like a rugby game. I don't know. What were your thoughts on the officiating?
Yeah, I thought UConn got a little bit of a rough deal. I'm not the hook and hole. I I'm not a fan of it. The call. I think it's a little, but by rule, right, it was the foul that they called. I think was on Mullins, where they called like a jump ball, or they called a foul on Mullins, and it should have been a jump. That was a weird one where like the foul really should have been on Michigan. That was an on. But look, I mean, Dan Hurley was very diplomatic after the game, and he said, "Look, if I'm playing a national championship game, or I have to play every game like the rest of my coaching career with those three guys, as an effect, I'm going to sleep well at night." So he was very. And one thing that I think we learned last night is that Dan Hurley is the best coach in college basketball right now. They were not as talented as Michigan. He made the decision to figure out a way to out-rebound Michigan despite being at a major height disadvantage. Hold Michigan to, I mean, look, it was Bill Michigan missing shots. Under 70 points, under 40% from the field, under 15% from three-point range, and give themselves a chance to win. And it was like, there was a tweet out there from Opta about like those four things, teams all time in the NCAA tournament are 1-50, and the one win was that. Dan Hurley is a magician, and to give his team an opportunity to win that game last night, you can have whatever opinion you want on his sideline antics or his flirtation or non-flirtation with the Lakers job a couple years ago. That guy's a coach, and if I can have one guy out there to win any game, he is the guy I am choosing.
Yeah, that Lakers deal was to get a raise. I mean, that was just kind of that was never happening. I don't know, anything else on the game? Nothing you probably look at towards next year, right? It's just, it's so hard to tell, but me, did anything jump out to you? I can't even look here in Connecticut, so I'm not as in tune with those numbers as I probably should be, but it's not as easy as these other sports where you can kind of look at next year's odds and something jumps out to you.
I'm in the same boat as you now, being back home. I don't see anything. Unless you've got foresight into who's transferring and where these 1,000 guys in transfer portal are going, how can you bet? Like the last year, I had some people close to the situation at Miami, not in Miami employees, but people close to the program who felt that there was a really good chance that the Boozers were going to go to Miami. And there were some 7,500 to ones available on Miami last year, right around this time and a little bit after. And that ultimately wind up did not materializing, but it was very close. I could put it to you that way. And put the Boozer Twins on this Miami team, which made the second round of the tournament and was a 3-seed of the ACC. You put those two guys on Miami, that 7,500 to one would have looked really good. So if you can get some information or you've got it in and you've got a kind of an eye on to the potential for some of these big names in the portal going some places, I would certainly check out some price. I mean, look, there were some great prices at Michigan earlier in the year, right? We were some really, really long prices, and those went away quick, and they were certainly justified. So congrats on anybody who got those good numbers.
Especially when it's going on. I mean, it's during football season when they're killing everybody out in, what was it, Vegas, the players there. I mean, that's Thanksgiving week. You know, people are dealing with the holidays. People are watching football, NFL and college football. That's not always on the tip of people's minds. But I'm looking at the odds. I found a tweet with them. Duke 8-1, Michigan 12-1, Florida and Arizona 15-1, Michigan State, Kansas, and Houston all in the 16-1 range. Arkansas 18-1, Illinois also 18-1, UConn 20-1. I don't know. Let me know if you think anybody or can think of anybody that
like how can you bet Arkansas knowing Acuff's going to go to the draft? How can you do that?
He always reloads. He's a good recruiter. I mean, the one that jumps out to me, I'm going to be a broken record here. I mean, you just take a shot on Hurley at 20-1, figure he'll get something in the portal, and he's going to have his team pretty respectable.
Yeah, they are a perennial team. You know that they will likely win the Big East or be right there in the Big East. What was St. John's? Because, that was a team that, I mean, they're going to wind up losing some guys, but it feels like Pitino is really building them into a really good program once again. So that might be a team that you're worth. I mean, maybe they could find some more offense than they had this year. That might be a team worth looking at.
Who are you betting for the Masters?
I'm probably going to wind up having a Scotty ticket at plus 550. I have not made any outright win bets yet, outside of a rogue Chris Goddard-up number we talked about months ago. At the very start of the year. But what I did bet, I bet a lot of alternative type deals. I bet Zach Johnson to be the top senior. This was at DraftKings at minus 102. You look at the group of six guys that he's a part of, every other guy is at minus 400 or longer to miss the cut. Zach, at least, has been respectable in his two PGA Tour events this year. He's made the cut. He's been very well on the senior tour. But you're looking at Zach Johnson, Mike Weir, Angel Cabrera, who was in prison 2 years ago, Vijay Singh, Jose Maria Olazabal, Mike Weir. Like if Zach Johnson doesn't win that, then so what? But I thought that was a really good bet that a DK, Zach top senior. I bet a, you can have whatever opinion you want on parlays, but I thought this was like a parlay, like something wrong, something really, really wrong has to go in order for me to lose this. This was also a DraftKings top 20, including ties. Put together Scottie Scheffler with Xander Schauffele. That came out to minus 110. So I hit that one pretty good. Scottie has never been outside the top 20 in, I think, his five Masters trips. And outside of the first time Xander Schauffele played Augusta, the only time he's been outside the top 20 was when he missed the cut when he had a bad back. So something's going to have to go, I think, really wrong in order for Xander or Scottie to finish outside the top 20. So I bet that. I bet Xander top 10, including ties, at plus 105 at FanDuel. They're actually offering as well like a 30% boost for like your top X finish. So like you can get that up to like plus 137 with that boost. Again, Xander top 10 seems very, very likely, and to avoid those dead heats, to include the ties, that was something worthwhile. I played Cam Smith to miss the cut at close to plus $2. Guy has missed the cut in five straight majors. I just don't know if he cares anymore. If it being on the live tour is just more cares kind of about just laying low and relaxing and living in Australia and just enjoying life with his family. So I played that, and then I played a couple of matchups. I played Tyrrell Hatton at plus 110 against Shane Lowry. Hatton is one of the better putters out there. He plays tough golf courses very well. Lowry's form since blowing that API a couple weeks ago has not been that good. And his form at Augusta hasn't necessarily been great. So I played Tyrrell Hatton in the matchup there. And I played Patrick Reed in the matchup over Brooks Koepka. That was minus 138. Reed plays Augusta National very well. And we'll see about Brooks Koepka coming back to the PGA Tour now. He's had a couple of great finishes at Augusta, and he's had a couple of non-competitive years, but Reed has been very, very good here, so that was the other matchup that I played.
Anyone you wouldn't bet, anyone you sense is like going to be trendy or people are going to flock to this week that you would throw up the red stop sign here and kind of...
Yeah, I am not a Matt Fitzpatrick guy. He has gotten a lot of hype this week. His Augusta performances haven't necessarily been great. I think his price is a little bit reduced, so I would not play Matthew. And I would not play Colin Morikawa. That is someone whose health has not been great. He's been nursing a bad back. He finally felt like he got better, and then yesterday you see taking it day-to-day. He injured his back again in the warm-up, so I think the 30-something to one that is out there on Morikawa, I'd not play that. And I am not a Ludvig Åberg guy in terms of Åberg to win. He has curled up in the fetal position when he has gotten into contention or into the lead on Sundays in the last few events that he's played. Had a shot at to beat Scottie Scheffler for years back. Same thing. Played small when the stakes were the best, and I think he's someone that if you're looking for a top 20 or something like that, yeah, you can certainly do that. But to win, I don't know about there are what, six players shorter than 20 to 1, Scottie, Rahm, Bryson, Rory, Åberg, and Xander. Like, I don't know if I'd be betting Åberg at 17 to 1. Bryson's the one that's interesting to me. Like, I think if I'm looking for an alternative to Scottie, who I do think ultimately will win, I think Bryson is the guy who is look, the live events are what they are with the fields and the courses that they play. But Bryson seems to be a guy that is very, very dangerous, I think, this week.
Any baseball takeaways here about a little less than 2 weeks into the season? Anyone you think, you know what, I was wrong about this team. This team's better than I thought, worse than I thought. Anything you've changed your mind on here a couple weeks in?
I don't know necessarily changed my mind. I think I was reaffirmed on the Marlins over. I actually did wind up taking a little bit of a shot at them 20-something to 1 to win the division. Now, given the Mets injuries with Soto, the Phillies, I don't know how great they are. The Braves, I think the Braves are better than I thought they would be, but I think the Marlins could be around for a while, and there's some plus money still available on the Marlins to make the playoffs. But I think they're a better team than people might be realizing. I think the Yankees start was something that we had talked about, that while we were down on them and kind of questioning the way that they've acquired players, their pitchers have been great. Is it able to be sustained with Schlittler and Warren? I don't know, but they are certainly off to good start. I know you had a nice little number there on Rice MVP, but yeah, I think it was more reaffirmed on the Marlins with them being pretty good. I mean, who were somebody like the Giants? I think people thought they might be good.
Yeah, Orioles have played terribly.
Thank you. I've been trying to select their memory there. Yeah, the Orioles not being, and you and I hit the nail on the head with that. Like, everybody was on them, and we're like, oh here we go. Yeah, that doesn't look, hell's at least been struggling as well. So yeah, the Orioles bets don't feel too great about.
Yeah, 4-6 right now, but who knows? I mean, I always make this point and say this. If a team lost 6 out of 10 in May, nobody would even notice. But we love our buddy Steve Fezzik. A team loses 6 out of 10 in April, the first 10 games of the season. Oh, they're done. They stink.
This bet's a loser. Red's bet's a loser.
Yes, he likes to make these declarations. It's down now. I can't check the odds. I know FanDuel moved to 45-1. I got Rice, gave it out over the weekend at 150-1. It was down to 100-1 at DraftKings last I saw it. Are you on board? Do you just think, you know what, it's just a donation? Where are you at with Rice? Do you think
it's probably a donation? But at 100 and 150 to 1, I took. Why not? Took a chance, because if you look at the odds board, like, you've got Judge, you've got Bobby Witt, and you've got a couple other guys. Like, but there are people that are much shorter than Ben Rice that have absolutely no shot to win that award. It's just because of the name. Like, Jose Ramirez is not winning MVP. Like, Mike Trout is not winning MVP. Like there are guys out there that it's just not going to happen. So, why not? I mean, I was looking at National League MVP and home run mark, like Jordan Alvarez, to lead the major leagues in home runs, and he's been off to a great start. And would have loved to have seen him get a home run at Coors last night. Hopefully he can get on the board the next couple of games out there. But he's been – I think the Astros – talk about your other question. The Astros are a little bit better than I thought they would be as well. We'll see if that can continue without Hunter Brown now for a while. Are they really going to get Lance McCullers to pitch that way for a prolonged period of time? Who knows? But now that we're talking it out, that's another team that came to mind that is better. Cam Smith finally. Hey, look at this. Cam Smith is good. Imagine that. Where was that last year?
And you tipped me off to a good number you're able to find on Alcantara, 55-1 for Cy Young. He's down to 30-1. I don't know if you saw this. There's reports that the Marlins, he's expected to be traded if the Marlins are not in the hunt. So that's another reason we hope the Marlins play well, he gets traded to the American. Now, if he got traded to the Dodgers or something, that helps his profile and things like that. Although I don't know if the Dodgers need another pitcher, but who knows? The Dodgers feel like they always need another everything. But
correct.
That is another.
I think they're going to be in it, though.
I would hope so. NBA, what do you got going on? It's been a captivating last couple of weeks. A lot of close games, high intensity. It's just a great, exciting time of the year in the NBA. I have said, and I've given out a few on the group chat, these overs have done really well. Just find a game where you don't think there's going to be a lot of intensity, and guess what? They're not that hard to find, and play the over. But have you been betting NBA nonsense?
Being away cost me so much money in terms of the NBA and the ability to play these Tankapalooza parlays and these overs, and not having access to books while I'm overseas, because there's never anything that's free money. I mean, I think there was a night where the Kings beat the Nuggets or something during this run,
but the Raptors, I think.
There've been a couple of them, but for the most part, it's like, there was a game that was like 150 to 130 or something. It's just comical.
Oh, it's every game. It's every game. Yeah, it's insane.
And now you have teams that are like tanking for their draft, for their playoff position. Like, the Cavs are openly like, yeah, we want to be in the 4-5 against the Hawks. And I think they play each other the next couple of nights or coming up. Like, So like, I wonder what the numbers are going to be like. The Cavs are just openly going to sit guys to make sure they lose and they're in that 4-5 type of game. Once they clinch the four, they'll be like, okay, we're good, and don't even want to bother with the 3-6. So, like, what a beautiful sport it is. But while I was gone, like, to show you how little I was paying attention into other, like, how the hell did Cooper Flagg all of a sudden the -200 favorite of rookie of the year? By Con Knappel, great numbers now. I'm going to have to sweat that crap.
Yeah, you're more than have to sweat it. And our Wemby put that in the category. This is a category that it's just getting too much attention lately, or too much traffic. Great bets that don't get home. Wemby at 25 to 1 to win MVP. It's not going to get home. SGA is going to win.
I'm 75 to 1 MVP.
You have him 75 to 1?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! Did you do anything with it? Did you take SGA?
No. Never was able to. I honestly thought that. The SGA stomach injury, ab injury, is going to keep him out a little bit longer.
It got to under $3 last week or so, and I thought about doing it.
Yeah, it was away.
Like, eh. It was the same thing with Miami, Indiana, and UConn and stuff. I was like, the amount I'm getting back is really not worth it. Might as well just let it go, and now it's pretty much dead. Frustrating. Absolutely frustrating.
Do you think it is? Can you hope maybe that there are some intelligent NBA analysts, influencers, reporters, whatever you want to call them, that might be able to just be like what are we doing with this? You look at SGA and his impact on every aspect of the game compared to just SGA and what he has around him compared to what the Spurs did. Like, there are a lot more great arguments, I think, for Wemby to win MVP as is right now than there are SGA. Maybe a little voter fatigue won it last year. I don't know. Maybe I'm too biased to just trying to root my bet home. I don't know.
Wemby's got this rib contusion now, and I think the one thing, too, aside from the record and the one seed, SGA is going to have like 400 or 500 more minutes than him, which is the equivalent to whatever, 6 or 7 games, full games. I think that's probably going to sink him. I would love to be wrong, but I'm not sure.
Like the idiots out there, the Thunder are the one seed. The Thunder got the best red. If that's the reason you're voting for SGA, then like you're an idiot.
I'm with you. But we don't get votes, unfortunately.
No, we don't.
Bear, appreciate it, man. Anything else? What I missed? Soccer, horse racing, derby? Who's going to win the derby?
I did not bet anything for Champions League, which starts in a little while, about an hour after we finish recording this. Horse racing, I'm going to have to wait and see. I have a future on a horse that I don't want to give it out because the number is long gone because it was a fixed price. I think Renegade will go favored, with the Ryder tease up. I think Further Ado with John Velasquez, I think he's got a big shot. I think Chief Wallaby, for Bill Mott will be an interesting horse as well. I did bet a couple of draft props. I bet Zion Young to go in the first round at +120. I bet TJ Parker to go in the first round at -160. And I bet Caden Proctor around 5-1 to go in the top 10. I know that is a little bit of a price, and people are kind of torn on Proctor, but I hear that there's a team in the top 10 who are doing a lot of due diligence on him, and they like him, and they are an offensive line needy team. So maybe I figure it's worth a shot. But, yeah, we'll start hearing some more draft info as the days and weeks trickle in. I can't wait for the draft.
Oh, boy.
Favorite betting event of the year.
2 years ago, it was great. There's been some great ones. There's also been some absolute bloodbaths where you get some information. And the information may have been right. In some cases, it definitely was not right. And it's just kind of a mixed bag, and I just got to keep reminding myself to go easy.
Correct.
Banks at 6, Charles Cross years ago. We don't need to go over the list, but
man, no.
It's
Anthony Richardson.
Oh, 2 years ago was great. 2 years ago was unbelievable.
Hopefully we can have, because Anthony, we had the good one with the kid from Georgia, the linebacker that went to Green Bay, and we had Walker. Him like, yeah. So we had that. That was a great year. Then I think the year after that was Anthony Richardson, which was a bad draft. Then the year after that was Alt, and that was a good draft. Last year
Bo
was
Nix.
Terrible.
Bo Nix was very nice.
Yep. That
was,
and then So I think the in out the zigzag. I think we're set for a good one this year.
Well, on that note, we'll end it on that, and we'll hope that's the case. Bear, where can we find you? Appreciate it.
Bear Betts, Chris Felica. I'm home now. Sorry, I couldn't interact with a lot of people. I was away.
Are you focused though?
The focus is back. As I told you guys yesterday, immediate focus upon landing at JFK in New York. I was able to bet Colorado under 4.5 wins, Florida State under 6.5 wins. I had to prove my worthiness. I had to prove my focus that I landed. And the first thing on my mind was betting those college football win totals at FanDuel, but in New York, because I can't do it here in Connecticut.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, Fez on the group chat will often remind any of us when he feels the need for us to focus, remind us to focus, kind of scold us. But Bear, appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on.
You got it, brother.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to the Bear, Chris Felica. We will be back on Friday. See you then.